on July 3rd, 1776, the day before the Congress adapted the Declaration of Independence, John Adams wrote a letter to his wife and foretold really the role of fireworks in the 4th of July celebrations. He said, "The day will be most memorable in the history of America." He said, "I'm apt to believe that it will be celebrated by succeeding generations as the great anniversary festival." He said, "It ought to be solemnized with pomp and parade, bonfires and illuminations." Illuminations would be a term used for fireworks. "From the end of this continent to the other," or rather, yes, "from one end of the continent to the other, from this time forward forevermore," he said. And we do live in freedom. And I'm thankful this morning to have the privilege to meet together with you, open up freely the Word of God, and declare to you the Word of God, because we are a free nation and have the ability to do this. God also designed us to live in freedom, didn't he? He wants us to celebrate the freedom that he has allowed us to have in him. But we cannot celebrate freedom in God if we will not listen to him when he speaks to us. To celebrate freedom's peace, we need to be obedient to his leadership in our life. I remember when God spoke to my heart as a young person, when I desired years ago to live for God. I wanted to sell out for him. But as a child, I had some things in my past that I needed, you know, skeletons in the closet. We refer to it that way, a past. And God continued to bring up my past. You know, he kept bringing it up to me. When I said to him, "I just want to serve you. I want to forget about the past. I want to leave the past in the past." And he kept bringing it back up. "But no, it's not over yet. You need to make things right." And I said, "But no, I want to get right with you, God. I want to go on. I want to serve you. I want to live for you. I want to be a pastor. I want to be a man of God." But he would bring it back up when I would hear a sermon. And he'd say, "Yes, I want you to be a pastor. I want you to be a man of God. But you have to deal with these things first." Did you know that I came to that place in my life as a young person who desired to live for God when I just could not go on for God? Or until I made things right with God. Until I stopped and listened to him. I stopped my own way and I listened to him. Did you know God has authority in our life? He has authority over us. And he demonstrates his authority and he teaches about his authority in all of chapter 21 of Matthew. And Jesus, as he teaches his disciples and is an example to his disciples in chapter 21, he also teaches these religious men that came to him. It was the chief priests and the scribes and the Pharisees and the elders, it says, who came to him and questioned him. And he said, "I am the authority." And really he demonstrated his authority when he came into Jerusalem riding on a donkey. Remember the triumphal entry of Christ riding on a donkey to tell the nation that he came in peace? Not a conquering king to throw off the Roman government, but a king that came in peace. He went right to the temple and he threw over the tables. Why would he do such a thing? Because he had the authority to clean his own house, didn't he? And that's exactly what he did. He threw the tables over. He also has authority over nature. Remember, as he was leaving the temple after that day of cleaning of the temple, and as he was leaving, he saw the tree that should have bore fruit, but it had no fruit. And he cursed it, and it withered and died. Not only authority over nature, but he also said while he was saying to his disciples, as he was withering that tree, that he has authority over the religions because he is the true God. He also has the ability to delegate his authority to whoever he desires to delegate authority to. And we found in John the Baptist that Jesus gave authority to him. Where did John the Baptist get his authority, Jesus asks? Well, he got it from heaven. But they didn't want to admit that, did they? No. Why? because they have a problem with authority. They didn't want anybody to tell them what to do. And so now Jesus, as he told them that they needed to be obedient to his authority, and they knew what obedience looked like because they identified it in the son who said he wouldn't go to the field, but then he repented and went to the field. And the son who said, I'll go to the field, but he never went to the field. And so they identified what real obedience to authority is, because they said, well, it was the son who repented. And Jesus said, bingo, you've got it. Maybe that's not a good way to describe it. Bingo, right? You've got it. You know how to identify authority. Now here's the problem. You won't do it. You know what obedience looks like, but you won't obey authority. And so today he tells them that in their rejection, in their disobedience, the consequences, what they have to face, what they've lost, and what judgment has come upon them because they will not listen to the authority that God has put in front of them. They will not listen to the authority of God. And so they have brought, listen now, they have brought judgment upon themselves. And they knew it. And they still would not listen. And so he gives them a parable. Because, you know, when your heart is so hard, you will not listen to authority. You will not listen to God. You will not listen to the man of God. You won't listen. You know, it's sad, but the only way Jesus could get through to these guys was to tell them a story, give them a parable. And so that's just exactly what he did. That's what a parable is. A parable is a story. Now, this week, as I studied for hours and hours with this particular text, I want you to know the challenge of preaching this parable, I have felt it this week. For a couple reasons, let me explain to you. Jesus is finishing up his exposition on authority. He's finishing it up here. And their rejection of authority culminates to their own destruction. And that's what he's going to tell them. But he uses it in parable form. And so he tells them a story that has real meaning. So I'm going to tell you a story of sort of a situation that's not really real, but it describes something that is real for them. So now the challenge that I had this week is to interpret the parable, like explain the parable, then turn around and explain the parable to them, and then explain the same parable to them, to us. So it's been a trifecta of study this week. It's been interesting, but it's been good and rich and exciting. So a little bit along the way, you'll find that we're doing some studying. Don't let it distract you. Don't let it discourage you. Let it sink in, some of the thoughts that we're going to uncover in this particular lesson. Allow it to penetrate to your heart. And when we come to the end, you'll find that if you are finding yourself in the same position as these religious elite, in understanding what obedience looks like and knowing what God wants you to do, but still not listening to God, that you'll find yourself under the same condemnation. We need to mark these things and listen. There should be no reason this morning, no reason whatsoever, that you and I should not have the fruit of obedience in our life. There's no reason for it. You know why? Because God is so good to us. He is so good to us. And there is no reason that we shouldn't obey him. Not at all. He was good to the Jews. He delivered them all through their history, didn't he? He brought them out of condemnation all through their history. He brought them through battles and wars and conflicts and protected them, a nation, his people, the children of Israel, the people of God. He did that. Now, there's no reason for disobedience. Look at verse 33. Let's see if we can get into the parable, see the story, and make application to the Jews, okay? To those that he's speaking to on scene there. Here are the parable. Here another parable Jesus says. There was a certain householder which planted a vineyard. Now, I'm going to take it slow so you can not go to sleep on me here, okay? Let me set the scene and I'll talk to you about the householder, okay? Jesus is speaking to the religious elite who come to him wanting to kill him right there on the spot. They hate him. Why? Because he went into the temple and flipped over the tables. He demonstrated authority that they didn't think he had. And so now they're questioning him. Who gave you the authority to do what you've done? And you can imagine that as Jesus is with his disciples and these religious, you know, authorities are coming to him and questioning him with their finger out. Why did you do this? Why did you think you had the authority to do what you have done? And there's a crowd, really a multitude of people, I think we can imagine, if we would this morning, people that are sort of gathering. Because every time Jesus was teaching or speaking, a crowd naturally gathered to see and hear what he had to say. Always it happened that way. So that's the scene. And Jesus says, as he's already explained to them about obedience, and they identified it. Remember in our last parable, he said, let me give you another parable. Let me tell you another story to describe to you another piece of who you are in your character. He didn't say that part, but let me give you another story. He said there was a householder. Why would he be called a householder? Because he was wealthy. He owned property. He owned land. He planted a vineyard there, which means he created sort of an opportunity for fruit, a business, a way to produce fruit. So he planted the vineyard. It says he hedged it roundabout. To hedge something is to place protection around the borders of it. So he placed a protection. What would it protect from? Well, the animals, right? From the wolves or from the elements, you know, the other little critters that would come up. Those of you who have a garden, you know, you got them raccoons or I don't know what comes in and eats all your goodies. But you'd love to just sit out there all night with a gun and shoot them off, right? Well, he put a hedge. And maybe it was a way for him to do off with the animals that would come to take the fruit. Then it says that he digged a wine press in it. What's that? Well, that means that he created a way for them to take the fruit that they would get and squeeze it into grape juice right on the spot. I mean, right there on the spot. So, I mean, it's like no waiting. You get the fruit, just put it in the wine press and squeeze it into grape juice right there on the spot. Then it says that he built a tower. Like, okay, we're going a little overboard here. No. A tower is to watch out for fire, right? To watch out for enemies that would come and pillage. So he built a tower. And it says that he let it out to husbandmen and went into a far country. Why would he do all of these preparations for a vineyard? You know why? Because he expected fruit. He built a vineyard that he expected would produce fruit. So he put all of the preparations in place to protect it, because he knew it was going to produce a lot of fruit. So he put the hedge, he built the tower, he built the wine press. I mean, it's all contained right there. He took care of his property, didn't he? I mean, he's got this thing well taken care of. It says he rented it out to husbandmen, men that would come in and take care of the fruit, produce the fruit, and everything is in order. Everything is in place. It's protected, fully protected. Jesus is speaking to them, to these men. Can we interpret this? I think maybe it would be easier for us to interpret this as we go. He's telling them that God has, all through their history, protected them. Hasn't God protected Israel all through their history? Well, yeah. He put a hedge about them. He's watched out for them. He's protected them. And it's all designed for one purpose. You know what? That God expected that Israel, his people, would produce fruit. He expected that. Humble obedience, the fruit of humble obedience, as God delivered him. Now, let's illustrate this. God, through his mighty hand, delivered Israel, on countless occasions. But let's just remember one. As they were in Egypt, and they were captured, really just under taskmasters, and God, through Moses, came in and delivered the children of Israel. And remember, as they are encountered to the Red Sea, and Moses stretched out his hands in the parting of the Red Sea. Remember that? What a mighty deliverance that God has given to his people. And when you get to the other side, you would think, because God did such an amazing deliverance, that they would do anything that he said. Wouldn't you expect that? Well, God has been so good to us. I mean, as a people, Israel, God has been so good to us that I think it's only right that he would expect that we would obey him. So why don't you go into the Canaan land? And they went and spied it out and found that there are giants. We can't go in there because there's giants in the land. And God said, no, okay. Since you won't obey me, then you'll stay in the wilderness for 40 years. I think the husbandman, or rather the householder, expected fruit because he had protected his vineyard so much. God does expect us to humbly obey his message, doesn't he? But we tend to reject him over and over. And I think that's the point that he's making to these men, who, as the householder, had created the vineyard and was confident that it would bear fruit. He rented it out and he left town. And in his heart, in his mind, the householder expects this thing is going to produce fruit. So what did he do whenever it was harvest time? Because he expected fruit, he sent forth servants, right? Verse 34. And when the time of the fruit drew near, he sent servants to the house, to the husbandmen. The husbandmen were the men who were watching to produce the fruit, right? The ones who were supposed to be doing the work. So he sent his servants to them. Why? Verse 34, that they might receive the fruits. Verse 35, and the husbandman took his servants and beat one, killed another, and stoned another. And I read that and I think to myself, what is going on here? What are these guys thinking? Verse 36, again, he sent other servants, more than the first, and they did unto them likewise. So it's harvest time. The householder expects fruit. He sends his servants, and they rejected them. The husbandmen rejected the servants. They beat them. They stoned them. They murdered them. It's amazing. So what's Jesus saying to Israel, to these men? Well, he's saying that God has delivered you. He delivered you over and over, and he expects fruit. He expects your humble obedience to him because of what he's done. He's been so good. But they tended to reject, didn't they, God's leadership? They tended to be disobedient to him. And so God, because he expected fruit and obedience to him, who did he send? Who did God send? He did send his son, but not yet. He sent prophets. He sent men with a message from heaven. Did you know a prophet is just a man who has a message from heaven? So in the New Testament sense, I'm a prophet this morning. Not that I have a new revelation, but I have a message. Where's my message from? Not for me. It's from heaven, for you. So in relation to what Jesus is saying here, God sent his prophets through the history to the children of Israel. And what did they do? What did the children of Israel do to every prophet? Every prophet, they rejected the message. Every message they rejected. You say, well, how can you say that? Well, we can go and see it all in one chapter. We won't do it this morning, but I challenge you to study chapter 7 of the book of Acts, where you have a concise historical record given to us by the deacon Stephen, who preached a message, became the first martyr as he was stoned at the end of this message. And what did he do? Well, all through what he did is he started off and he showed how Israel, all through their history, has demonstrated disobedience and rejection of God's man. You rejected God's man here. You rejected God's man here. You rejected the prophet here. You rejected the prophet here. And all through their history, they took the prophets and they stoned them, and they beat them, and they murdered them. And that's what Jesus is saying to these Jews. He's been so good to us, and we reject his prophet, is what he has said. So, what would we expect in our life God to do to us if we reject? He's been so good to us, and we reject his leadership in our life, and we won't obey him. Wouldn't we expect God to judge us with destruction? Well, it doesn't end there, does it? Because verse 37, it says he sent his son. This is very good. It says, the last of all, he sent unto them his son, saying, they will reverence my son. That's the householder, sent his son. But when the husbandmen saw the son, they said among themselves, this is the heir. Come, let us kill him, and let us seize upon his inheritance. And they caught him and cast him out into the vineyard and slew him. And so the son, now I want you to mark this. This is really interesting. This parable, I mean, it's a glimpse into the heart and the mind of God and why Jesus, because Jesus is the son. He's telling them of himself. And we get that. We get that. Jesus is the son. And then they would turn around and kill Jesus. And we know that too. But listen to the parable here and what Jesus, I think, is really trying to get across to these guys. You have sent two sets of servants to your vineyard. And you expect, because you have been so good, that they would obey your every word and your every leadership in their life. But you send your son without a military? You send your son with no reinforcements to slaughter those husbandmen? No. You send your son unarmed to a people who've already slaughtered all of your servants? What does that show? Mercy. This is mercy. We did not deserve Jesus to come to us. We didn't deserve it. But he came. He came, sent from the Father, condescended, as we said in class this morning, Philippians chapter 2, marvelous text in dealing with the condescension of Christ, from heaven, the king, to a pauper, a servant, a slave. And he came, and they saw him. They took him. They beat him. They murdered him. He speaks to them of what they will do soon. He says to them, he's giving them a glimpse of what they're about to do. And he's also telling them, you still have time. Oh, you still have time. Why did they still have time? Because they hadn't killed him yet. He was still there in mercy. He's saying, I'm coming in peace. Listen, I came on a donkey. I want to make peace between you and the Father. Hey, listen, the householder, he sent me because he wants me to make peace with you. I don't have a military. I just want to make peace. And they murdered him. And he's telling them what they're about to do. And as I said a minute ago, wouldn't you expect that when God, who has the right to expect obedience because of how good he's been, to those who have rejected him and done what these Jews have done and will do to his son, what do you think that the Father will do unto those who reject him? Wouldn't you expect him to judge and destroy those that are in rebellion? But not just judge and destroy and replace, right? They'd kill the servants. Religious leaders needed to respond. So now Jesus tells the story about the householder, the husbandman, the servants who were sent to get the fruit, and the son who was sent, and they were all slaughtered, they were all murdered. And so Jesus says, I want you to answer my parable. Give me the response. Tell me, what would the householder do? Verse number 40, rather. And the Lord said, therefore, of the vineyard, I'm sorry, when the Lord, therefore, of the vineyard cometh, what will he do to those husbandmen? They, that is the Jews, are there standing before Jesus. Listen to what they said. He will miserably destroy them. Those wicked men will let out his vineyard unto other husbandmen, which shall render him fruits in their seasons. So what will he do? He'll miserably destroy them. That's their interpretation. Okay, so he sent servants. He sent his own son. Now he's coming. The Father's coming. The householder. What's he going to do? Well, he'll destroy them. And he still expects fruit. So he's going to turn the vineyard over to somebody he trusts will give him fruit. Right? Did you know that they just interpreted the parable about what's going to happen to them? They just told Jesus what God is going to do to them. You know what I think is interesting to mark here? Because Jesus, I think, speaks to this in a little bit as he brings more clarity to the parable. Because their interpretation of the parable is missing one thing. You know what it's missing? Miserably destroy. That's kind of harsh, wouldn't you say? We deserve that, don't we? Replace with somebody who's going to do the work. Yeah, and we get all of that. But Jesus said, it's not over yet. It's not over yet. You see, there's still hope for you. There's still mercy that's being offered if you'll just stop what you're doing and take heed and believe and listen. If you'll just listen. If you'll just listen. You can receive mercy. But their interpretation is completely accurate. But at that point, I really think when they interpreted Jesus' parable, they had no idea that he was talking about them. And we look back on it and we say, wow, how did they not know? How did they not know? But I don't think they understood, even when they interpreted this, that he was talking to them. Their problem was they didn't want to listen to God. And it didn't matter what he said. He's the authority. He's demonstrated his authority. But they don't want to listen to him. They don't want to listen to him. So he said unto them, because they won't listen to him, they continue to reject him. Verse 42, Jesus said unto them, did you never read in the scriptures the stone which the builders rejected? Can we deal with this for a minute? I don't want to spend a lot of time on this. It's so rich and good. He's quoting from Psalm 118, verse 22. This is David speaking. And it's a reference to the Messiah. The builder is the religious leaders. The stone is Jesus. The stone is the Messiah. Did you not read in Psalm 118, verse 22, when David spoke about the stone, the Messiah, that the builders, the religious leaders, you would reject? Did you not read about the stone which ultimately the leaders would reject? And the builders rejected, verse 42. The same has become the head of the corner. What's that? Well, you're going to murder the son. You're going to... You don't know this yet, obviously, but you're going to murder the son. But he's still going to become the cornerstone. How is that? Because he's going to rise from the dead. And what happens when somebody rises from the dead? Imagine, Sarah, you're there. Lazarus is dead. 4 days. And you're there, you're part of the family, you're crying. Jesus shows up and he says, why are you crying? He's been dead 4 days. Roll the stone away. Lazarus, come forth! And Lazarus comes walking out of the grave and he was dead and now he's alive. What's going on in your mind? Marvelous. Marvelous. There's no words. And that's what he said. Verse 42, look at it. He said, he's going to become the head of the corner, and this is the Lord's doing, and it is marvelous in our eyes. There's really no words to explain what God's going to do in the resurrection, utter amazement, and that Jesus is going to rise from the dead. He says to them, did you not read this? Verse 43, therefore say I unto you, the kingdom of God shall be taken from you, and given to a nation bringing forth fruits thereof. You've lost the privilege because you've rejected the prophets, because you've rejected the Son. And now it's going to be taken from you and given to somebody who will listen. Who is that that Jesus is going to give it to? Who's the ones who are supposed to bring fruit forth the fruit of obedience? Who is he talking about? So if he's taking it away from the Jews because they rejected the prophets and because they rejected the Son, nailed him to a cross, it's going to be taken from them the ability to produce the fruit, and it's going to be given to somebody else. It's to you and I. It's to the church. And it's our responsibility to bring forth fruit. And God trusts that we are going to bring forth fruit, doesn't he? Why? He's been good to us, hasn't he? Oh, he's so good to us. And his desire and expectation is that we would produce fruit. It says that verse 44... I think it's kind of like one last sort of call to the Jews, these religious elite that are standing there. Now remember, I said you need to keep your seatbelt on. We'll get to some application in a minute. We've got to finish this, the parable truth here, okay? It gets good. It gets really good. So He's told them who they are. He's now telling them that they are the ones, they are the husband who's rejected the leadership of God. They're the ones who've rejected the prophets. They've rejected the Son. They will not listen. They will not listen to God's authority. They will not obey. And so now he says in verse 44, there's still a chance for you. Speaking to the Jews. Speaking to these religious elite who are going to nail him to a cross shortly. Just a few days. He says, there's still a hope for you. I'm not dead yet. And there's hope for you. But if you will not fall on the stone. It says verse 44. Somebody read the first part of it to me. It's fall on the stone, right? Stop right there. It's fall on the stone shall be broken, right? So that means Jesus is the stone. If you'll fall on him, God will do something in you. But if you won't fall on the stone, read the last part. The last part of verse 44. Read after. On whom it shall fall, it will grind him to powder. So if you fall on Jesus, then you can be saved. But if he falls on you, you'll be destroyed. He says there's still hope for you. If you will just listen. If you'll just listen to me. If you'll just listen, then you can have mercy this morning, he says. If you'll just listen. Open your ears. Open your heart. Because you can have mercy if you'll stop in your rebellion, he says. You know, we have a hard time listening to people who we don't want to accept them as our authority over us. And since God is the authority, you can expect this morning that he's going to judge you if you don't turn to him in obedience. If you decide not to listen to him, you can expect judgment to come. And since God does have the authority, whenever he comes expecting obedience, because that is his expectation and his right, and he doesn't have obedience, and you won't listen to him whenever he speaks to you, then you'll find that he will not use you. You'll be replaced. So whenever it's time for you to go to work and your boss asks you to do a project and it has very specific instructions and, you know, he gives you a due date because, you know, at work, our boss has a tendency to do that. Give us a job and then tell us it needs to be done by a certain time, you know. So then we get in there and we start working on it, but we find that we like our way better. So we do the project our boss gave us our way. And we turn it in the time that it's due, but our boss is not happy, is he? Why? Because we did it our way, not his way. What happens if you do that long enough? You're going to be replaced. You're not listening. You're not the boss. Your boss is the boss. He tells you to do something, you do it his way, not your way. I remember when I was in college, the instructor gave us a class, or rather gave us a project in our class, and the project was that we would outline all the kings of the Old Testament, and that we would talk, you know, not only about their nature and king, and then whenever the Israel divided, talk about the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom and all the kings, and we needed to outline that. What if I went in there on that outline and I said, well, you know what, I don't want to do, how boring is an outline of the kings of Israel? I'm going to do an outline on the mighty men of valor, you know. So I turned an amazing project, on the outline of the mighty men of valor. And it has little tabs on the side. It's great, great paper. It's not going to do well, is it? Because I didn't do what my instructor asked me to do. I did what I wanted to do. Whenever we hear God's leadership in our life, he speaks to us clearly and we don't do it. Why do we expect things in our life to go well when we do that? Why do we expect that we're not going to have any trials or judgments come to us whenever we decide to do things our way and not God's way? So when we're at a gas station and God tells you to give a tract away, you know, by the way, in the box back there, there's little cards. You can pull it out and give it as an invitation to somebody. Just, hey, church, great church down the road. It's sort of hidden in the residential area. You might not know about it. Valley Avenue Baptist Church. The signage isn't that great, but, you know, you can't miss it. And you tell them about the church. You give them a tract. Why? Because God told you to do that. But instead, when you heard God speak to you about giving a tract, you said, I'll just be nice to them. And maybe they'll ask me where I go to church, and then I'll tell them. You see, you might have a heart to tell somebody about church, but you did it your way and not God's way. Or you hear the man of God, he gets up and he preaches a message on salvation, and he says salvation is by grace through faith, and it's not of works, lest any man should boast. And you realize that baptism doesn't save you, and you realize that being a good person doesn't save you. You realize that none of the effort, outward earthly efforts that we put forward gets us to heaven, and you realize that. And God speaks to you, and he shows you that you're not really saved because you've been relying on your goodness or your good works to get you to heaven. And he tells you you need to get it settled this morning. But you say in your heart, well, you know, I am a good person, and I am faithful to church, and I do things for God, you know, and I do talk to people about God a lot. And because of that, you say, I really do think that I'll be okay. The problem is you're not going to be okay. You're not obedient to God. You're not listening to him. He's speaking to you, but you won't listen. He's trying to get through, but your heart is closed because you've got it figured out, and you figured it out your way. And you won't find God's blessings whenever you live your life your way. You'll be judged, and you will be replaced. What do you mean replaced? Well, can I just say it this way? If you're saved this morning, you want God to use you, don't you? Oh, I just want God to use me. I hope that's your attitude. You ever find that in your life as a Christian, you want God to use you, but you wonder why he doesn't? I want God to use me, but why doesn't he use me? It comes back to this. Because somewhere along the way, God has asked us to do something and we won't do it. Or we want to do it our way, not his way. And he won't use you. He won't use you if you do that. I surrendered to be a pastor when I was in 11th grade going into 12th. I was at summer camp. Man of God preached all week at camp. Camp's a great place, isn't it? A lot of great things happen at camp. I surrendered to be a pastor at camp. Oh, it was a wonderful. And I started making plans through my senior year, giving my heart to God, making lots of changes, started reading my Bible, you know, made plans to go to Bible college and kind of got everything in order to be obedient to God and do what God wanted me to do. And then I was sent in a preaching time and, you know, and I was in my freshman year of Bible college. I'm sitting in preaching time and God kept speaking to me about something that was in my life. You see, my senior year, I met a girl, and we were in school together, and we liked each other. So we started going out, you know, like we became an item. And a thing to behold, you know. Her parents were excited. My parents were excited. My pastor was excited. Yeah, everybody was excited. But I was sitting in college. Did I tell you why I went to college? To be a pastor? Yeah. So I'm sitting there, and God tells me you need to break up with her. I said, God, why? You know, why? Everything, the stars seem to be lining up on this one. You know, it seems to be great. There is no problem here. What is the issue? And he just kept telling me. He kept telling me, you need to break up. And you know what really it boiled down to? I was sitting in class, freshman year, sitting in class. I have no idea what my teacher was talking about because I was reasoning in my mind one thing. I had to make a decision. I'm either going to go to Bible college and be a pastor and obey God, or I need to get out of the school because I am a joke. I will not listen to God. And I decided right there in class on the spot, you know what? It's not worth it. I don't know what God's plan is, but I'm going to obey him. So I did one of the hardest things I've ever done. I called her, went over, told her dad, lots of crying. Told my pastor, he was mad at me. He was. Just nobody was happy. I went to church. Oh, I had a burden lifted. I mean to tell you what. Burden was lifted. I was feeling like, oh, a heavy load is gone. But nobody at church liked me anymore. I would come in, I'm feeling great. Like, I obeyed God, and everybody's like, don't talk to him, you know. But I didn't care. And all that stuff went away, you know. People understood in time. But I think we all need to come to that realization, don't we? And God has been so good to us, and he expects that in our life we would bear fruit. What is the fruit? That we would obey him. The fruit of our life is obedience. And whenever you decide that God has been good to you, and he is taking care of you, and he wants to lead you, and the least we could do is be obedient to him and follow his leadership in our life, and we would decide that, you know what, it's not worth it, is it? It's not worth it. The way I've been going, it's not worth it. I mean, you can keep going that way you want, if you want, but here's what you'll find: judgment, and you won't be used. You will be judged. Condemnation will come on you. That's what Jesus is saying, and you won't be used, but mercy is still offered. He's still offering mercy through Christ his Son. And the mercy is this: if you'll just listen to me, I will bless you and use you and produce fruit in your life. If you just listen to me, if you'll just listen to my voice. But our hearts are hard sometimes, aren't they? And we won't listen because we want it our way. It's not worth it. You can go your way if you want, but it's not worth it. I've done it too many times. So have you. It's not worth it. So this morning, what does God want you to do? I really do think that he wants us to take the warning. Because the parable, yes, it applies directly to Israel. That they, through their history, have rejected God, and now they're going to be replaced by the Christians, God's people, the church, that will produce fruit. But it applies to you individually. That God speaks to you probably this morning. And he's leading you probably this morning. And all he asks is that you would obey him, follow him, and lead his leadership. Father, this morning, we pray that you will help us in our life, that we would learn to be obedient to you. Lord, just think about the simple things, the little things in life. That so often, God, it's just hard to do what you want. Our heart, the pull of our flesh, the condition of our heart, just hard, Lord. I pray you'll this morning help us to be soft, tender, and Lord, one step closer, Lord, that we might see clearly the danger that's ahead for disobedience, Lord, please. Thank you for your authority in our life. Thank you for the warning, and God, thank you for mercy. And I pray that you will help us to take heed to the message of Jesus this morning, that we would just simply listen. Listen to the call of obedience. We'll give you glory in Jesus' name.